Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, March 4th, 2025. Believe it or not, we're already into March of this year. So happy March, happy spring or pre-spring. As always, we begin with today's top stories. The first headline reads, Rainbow Agro. That's Rainbow Agro, A-G-R-O. Manufacturer coming to town. Goal is for facility to start operating late this year or early next. This article is written by Jana Wiersema and is based out of Champaign. As the sixth annual Champaign-Urbana Ag Tech Week continues, a global manufacturer of agricultural products has announced plans to establish a local presence thanks in part to area ties to the industry. Rainbow Agro plans to open a partner production center at the former Rockwell Automation Plant at 2802 West Bloomington Road, Champaign. Tom Lyons, general manager for Rainbow Agro North America, estimated that the plant could be up and running by late 2025 or early 2026. It will be the company's second major facility in the United States. He described Rainbow Agro as a global provider of crop protection solutions. So we really focus on the supply chain of those products for our partners and growers, he said, later adding that it partners with other companies that have their own customer bases and respective brands. Rainbow Agro operates in more than 100 countries across five continents, according to the company's website. Its headquarters, is located in China, as are many of its facilities, though it also has manufacturing bases in Texas, Spain, and Argentina. We're really excited that they chose us as their second location in the United States and look forward to seeing what they do with the partner production facility, said Carly McCrory McKay, Executive Director of Champaign County Economic Development Corp. According to property tax records, Rainbow Champaign LLC purchased the approximately 30-acre property on Bloomington Road for $11.5 million on January 1, 2025. This facility, which we refer to as our Partner Production Center, will be set up to provide facilities for warehousing, bringing product here, getting it ready, packaging it up, into the sizes that our growers would be looking for, and providing distribution out to primarily the Midwest, Lyons said. He added that they don't anticipate any significant renovations to the facility, which is well suited to their needs. Instead, the focus will be on installing the necessary equipment for their operations. When asked how many jobs the plant is expected to create, Lyons said the company does not have an estimate yet, but they are excited about the kinds of positions that will be available. We certainly see this as a modern and high-tech supply chain type operation, he said. So we're looking forward to seeing roles that will bring opportunity for engineering positions and supply chain roles, certainly in logistics and those type of areas. As for what attracted Rainbow Agro to Champaign, Lyons replied that the local ag tech industry, the University of Illinois, and area community colleges are all draws. But also, this is just a tremendous location for agriculture in the heart of the Midwest, he said. It's a perfect balance of agriculture and logistics and all the things that we see as being valuable to create a modern supply chain operation. The EDC began talking with Rainbow Agro last year about its interest in the community and facility needs, McCrory McKay said. Its involvement has included answering the company's questions and help it connect with local partners. We're excited about the potential of what's to come, and I think it's just a great fit into our local ag tech ecosystem that will be a value add, she said. And there are two photographs that accompany this article. One is of a large, open, empty facility, interior of a facility, and the caption reads, "The interior of the former Rockwell Automation Building at 2802 West Bloomington Road, Champaign. It's the future site of a Rainbow Agro Partner Production Center." That photo is provided by Robin Scholes of the News Gazette. along with another photo of a man sitting in front of a sign on a wall that says Rainbow, All About Growing. And he's talking and sitting at a table in front of the signage. The caption reads, Tom Lyons, L-Y-O-N-S, General Manager for Rainbow Agro North America at the former Rockwell Automation Building at 2802 West Bloomington Road, Champaign. And as a quick follow-up, at newsgazette.com, question about local comings and goings, you can write Kathy Reiser's mailbag. It's open for submissions of your questions. That's Kathy with a K, Reiser, R-E-I-S-E-R. The next headline reads, it's actually a large photograph front and center of the front page of the paper, and it says, IHSA Girls Basketball, that's Illinois High School Association Girls Basketball, full steam ahead. And it's a photo of, it's in the gym. There's lots of people standing up and applauding in the bleachers. And there's girls holding up a plaque. And it has the state on it and 2025. So we'll see what they won. Cisna Park girls basketball player Maddie Marcotte holds the Class 1A Super Sectional plaque the Timberwolves won on Monday night after beating St. Teresa 47-35, while Cisna Park fans cheer in the background at Blue Ridge High School. Cisna Park advanced to the 1A state tournament and will play a state semifinal game at 9:30 a.m. this Thursday at CEFCU Arena in Normal. That photo is provided by Robin Scholes of the News Gazette. Congratulations to Cisna Park. Next up, from Bob Asmussen. The big part is to give them a sense of empathy. Monticello High students turned school's upper floor into a Holocaust museum. This is based out of Monticello. If you stop by the upper floor of Monticello High School on Monday, dubbed the penthouse, you were no doubt impressed by the effort, the message, and the completed project. The sophomore English classes of Kara Hedinger, that's Kara, K-A-R-A, Hedinger, H-E-T-T-I-N-G-E-R, and Lisa Nuku, N-U-K-U, numbering 100 students, created a Holocaust museum with between 40 to 50 displays filling the school's upper hallway. The kids have just risen to the occasion, Hedinger said. It's so phenomenal. The museum was open to the public Monday and will remain on display for a few days. Hedinger, who was in her 14th year at the high school, spent part of Sunday in the building prepping for the first-time event. Why a museum? Every year, we're trying to find the most meaningful and profound ways to teach Holocaust literature and the content of the Holocaust, Hedinger said. It's such a big topic, and we want to make sure that kids learn to respect it, but also in a way they engage with it. The levels of care and dedication from the students toward the project have been off the charts. I've heard students say how they just feel so much more connected to it, Hedinger said, how it's opened their eyes to various issues in the Holocaust and in the world. The students have used their own strengths to build projects to share with the community and their peers. Kids who usually don't like English, finding ways to like English. And that's really awesome too, Hedinger said. Hedinger told the students early in the process that the project was intended for the public. She didn't want anyone to be surprised when it went on display. I think kids like to show what they can do, Hedinger said, giving them that authentic audience to really show off their strengths. To share what they've learned, that's powerful. We see that in so many ways, in so many units. A lot of times, athletes or musicians or thespians, they have this buy-in because the public is going to see them. A lot of times, classrooms don't have that. So when we can offer that to them in various ways, that's really meaningful. Nuku, who is also in her 14th year at Monticello High School, saw the students perk up when they knew others would see their work. Parents, grandparents, friends, and neighbors can all attend. So attention to detail improved. Massive improvement on spelling errors, Nuku said. They're just taking a little more care. The museum has a flow to it, allowing for the public to catch as many exhibits as possible. The whole idea is that people can meander and see different things and revisit exhibits, or skip one if it's busy or they are not as interested, Hettinger said. The teachers have been impressed with all the skill and the artistry, or with the skill and artistry of the students. Nuku had a group of boys create a gravestone in their industrial tech classes. It's unbelievable, she said. They built it completely themselves from scratch. They dedicated it all to the people lost in the Holocaust. Another group hung baby clothing from the ceiling tiles, with each piece of clothing representing a child who had died, with accompanying stories. It allows people to see the volume of losses, Nuku said. Large scale. After the end of Christmas break, Hettinger's and Nuku's English class students began to work on the book Night, a memoir by Eli Wiesel about his Holocaust experiences. That really started it, Hettinger said. We researched the Holocaust. We look into all of these details. We talk about big things like the universe of obligation and witnessing. We just really build this huge collaborative culture of what it means to learn about the Holocaust and find things like, or fight things like the Holocaust. It is serious, sobering material. Students receive a brief introduction to the Holocaust during their middle school years. Night provides a more detailed lesson. Really, the big part is to give them a sense of empathy because you're really hearing a story that involves emotion, Nuku said. Hettinger came up with a list of possible directions. The students took it from there. When we introduced it, I had a kid come up to me almost immediately. Her and her partner had a project idea that had not in any way, shape, or form crossed my mind, Nuku said. It took shape with the kids. The museum is the culminating project of the unit. The finished product is bigger than Hettinger expected and impactful. It's inspirational, Hettinger said. It really touches me. There was one group that when they showed Lisa their final product, she teared up. They showed me and I got goosebumps. These kids don't have a limit, and it's really cool to see what they can do. They are respectful of the subject matter. You hear those moments when they go silent in the classroom because they are taking in what we're doing, Hettinger said. She believes in today's high school students. I'm never worried about our future, Hettinger said. I really love everything they show me about who they are. She wants to see the Holocaust Museum to continue. I'm hoping this will become an annual thing for every class, Hettinger said. My hope is that this is something that kids can look forward to. Older students went to Hettinger and Nuku saying they wish they had put together a museum. Origin story. The idea for the museum came to the teachers last summer. During a continuing education workshop at the University of Illinois, Hettinger heard about a teacher building a museum for another subject matter. I went, we can do that, Hettinger said. It was like a light bulb went off. She was with another Monticello teacher, Brianna Hendrickson, and they started discussing what it might look like. It grew into a very real thing in my head. I felt like I had to do it, Hettinger said. She ran the idea by Principal Travis Corson to make sure it was doable. He said, absolutely, Hettinger said. We're lucky to have an administration who wants us to think outside the box and do things like this and really push students in unique ways. I don't ever feel restricted or held back here to try something new. That's a huge benefit to working here. Hettinger is a Villa Grove High School and University of Illinois alum. She grew up on a farm outside Tolono. Her son Noah, 15, is a student at Monticello. Nuku lives in Urbana with husband Albert, an accountant, and daughters Bellamy, third grade, Manon, first grade, and Remy, pre-K. Bob Asmussen is a college football reporter and columnist for the News Gazette. He can be reached at 217-393-8248. That's 217-393-8248 or Asmussen at newsgazette.com. That's A-S-M-U-S-S-E-N at newsgazette.com. And there are a couple of interesting photos that accompany this article. One is of a student, and he was wearing like a welding mask, and he is putting some, it looks like he's welding some metal together. The caption reads, "Monticello High School student Grant Kiger works in shop preparing elements for the school's Holocaust Museum." That photo is provided. And there's another photo that's provided with some photographs on display on a table and in the wall in the background. And that caption reads, "A Holocaust museum with between 40 to 50 displays filled the upper hallway at Monticello High School on Monday." That photo is provided by Nora Mayberry for the News Gazette. What an excellent project. Next up, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. That's J-I-M, last name Rosso, Rossow. As longtime president of Deluzac and Associates in the northwest Indiana town of Merrillville, Mary Jo, that's Marijo, Deluzac, Deluzac, has a client base that cheers mostly for Purdue in Indiana. "We still get along," she said. "I'm orange and blue all the way, though." Deluzac's allegiance to her alma mater is made clear on her alumni wall at work, where she's closing in on 35 years in charge of a successful financial planning operation. MJ lettered in basketball and volleyball at the U of I, class of 77, and remains close to the athletic program. A season ticket holder, MJ has been a regular at State Farm Center, including Sunday's home finale. Like so many former alumni, she's thrilled about the turnaround Shauna Greene has orchestrated. "It makes me wish I was 21 again," she said. A fierce rebounder back in the day, MJ is a big fan of Kendall Bostick and was on hand when the senior set the program mark for career rebounds. "She's my hero," MJ said, who has been given the opportunity by Greene to share her experiences with the current team. Her voice carries. MJ was on the roster when women's basketball and volleyball were introduced at the U of I. "It's unbelievable how well the team is playing. We're so proud of them," she said. Coming Wednesday, our six-page special section previewing the Illini at the Big Ten tournament. At newsgazette.com, podcast of Monday's WDWS program at the Esquire that was devoted to all things Illini women's basketball. And there's a photo that's provided, and it's of Mary Jo Deluzic. She's standing in what looks like maybe her office indoors. She's wearing an orange blazer and is smiling and is holding up an Illinois white basketball. And that photo's provided. Next up, let's take a look at history, area history. In 1925, at last night's Urbana Board of Education meeting, a petition signed by more than 400 voters was presented by A.C. Littleton and V.E. Shelford, asking that a question concerning the building of a school at the Leal site be presented to the public in a special election. In 1975, a record 33,242 students have enrolled at the University of Illinois for spring semester, according to the Office of Admissions and Records. The figure, which is about 1% higher than last spring's record of 32,931, includes 24,964 undergraduates and professional students and 8,278 graduate students. In 2010, the lobby of the historic Virginia Theater will get a makeover this summer and fall. That's in 2010. Champaign Park District Executive Director Bobby Harakovich said bids for a major renovation project for the lobby are due March 31st. And that's ironic because the Virginia Theater is now undergoing some updates and repairs and will be open again in April. International history, today's highlight. On March 4th, 1865, President Abraham Lincoln was inaugurated for a second term of office. With the end of the Civil War in sight, and just 6 weeks before his assassination, Lincoln declared, "With malice toward none, with charity for all, with firmness in the fight as God gives us to see the right, let us strive on to finish the work we are in to bind up the nation's wounds, to care for him who shall have borne the battle, and for his widow and his orphan, to do all which may achieve and cherish a just and lasting peace among ourselves and with all nations. The next headline reads, Interstate 57, Muhammad man cited for allegedly rear-ending squad car. This article is written by Dave Hinton and is based out of Chibance. A Muhammad man has been charged after his vehicle allegedly struck a stopped Illinois State Police squad car on Interstate 57 in Kankakee County. Harold McComb, 66, was charged with failure to reduce speed to avoid an accident and violating Scott's law, which mandates that drivers approaching a police car or other emergency vehicle stopped along the roadway change lanes if possible. The accident occurred at 1:49 p.m. Saturday. A state trooper who was responding to a report of debris in the roadway of I-57 at mile marker 302 near Chibance had parked the squad car in the right lane with the emergency lights activated to remove the debris. After the trooper returned to the squad car, it was rear-ended by a Lincoln SUV driven by McComb. The trooper and McComb were taken to an area hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. It marked the third crash involving a Scott's Law violation this year. Violators of the law face a fine of between $250 and $10,000 for a first offense. If the violation results in injury, the violator's license is suspended for a mandatory period of between 6 months and 2 years. The next headline reads, Champaign County Court. Champaign man gets 55 years for 2022 murder of Lyft driver. That's L-Y-F-T driver. This article is by Luke Taylor and is based out of Urbana. A Champaign man has been sentenced to 55 years in prison after being convicted of murder in the death of a Lyft driver in 2022. That's 55 years. In November of 2024, just a few months ago, Tyjon Williams, 19, was found guilty of 4 counts of first-degree murder in the death of a 29-year-old Christian Philpotts on January 12, 2022. Champaign County Judge Randy Rosenbaum handed down the sentence Monday. Williams will receive credit for 1,095 days served as he awaited his trial and sentencing. Evidence and witnesses brought by Assistant State's Attorney Scott Larson in the November trial indicated that Williams shot Mr. Philpotts from the back seat while being transported to a hair appointment. Two of Williams's friends, Nashawn Fenderson and Jaheim Dyer, were also in the vehicle at the time. Both were also charged with murder, but pleaded guilty to obstruction of justice and agreed to testify against Williams. While Chicago defense attorney Stephen Comey argued that either of those men could have been the shooter, police and forensic analysts demonstrated the angle the bullets traveled suggested they were fired from Williams's seat. While Fenderson's two-hour testimony was inconsistent and he appeared highly agitated in court, Dyer more clearly described Williams appearing agitated before shooting Mr. Philpotts. Williams and Mr. Philpotts had a disagreement after Williams decided he no longer wished to go to the hair appointment his mother had ordered a Lyft to transport him to. After being shot, Mr. Philpotts opened the car door and fell out, Dyer said, before Williams climbed forward and drove the Lyft vehicle 2 blocks before colliding with a parked truck. Williams, Fenderson, and Dyer all ran and were later found at different points through police investigation. The next headline reads, Fifth District Appellate Court of Illinois, conviction of 2021 murder overturned. Retrial possible, first jury not given proper instructions. This article is written by Luke Taylor and is based out of Urbana. The 2023 conviction of a Champaign woman sentenced to 47 years in prison for murder has been overturned. but it isn't yet certain if a retrial will be held. Ariana, that's A-R-I-E-A-N-A, Ariana Colbert, 24, was returned from the Illinois Department of Corrections to the Champaign County Jail last week as a result of a ruling by the 5th District Appellate Court of Illinois that found fault with Colbert's jury trial for the 2021 murder of 19-year-old Akari Ingram Triner. The appeals court reversed the jury's 2023 decision because, wrote Justice Michael McCaney, Champaign County Court Judge Randy Rosenbaum failed to give the jury instructions about a possible conviction for second-degree murder rather than first-degree murder. Colbert and other witnesses said that she and Miss Ingram Triner had been arguing and physically fighting outside of Colbert's apartment building leading up to the shooting. A neighbor testified to seeing Colbert fire the gun. Colbert testified that she did not intend to kill or harm Miss Ingram Triner and that she felt that her life was in danger as Miss Ingram Triner threatened to go get her brothers and come back. Public defender Janie Miller had argued that Colbert acted on an unreasonable belief in the need for self-defense, also known as, quote-unquote, imperfect self-defense, or that the shooting was involuntary manslaughter. If the jury had agreed with the first argument, a conviction for second-degree murder would be appropriate under Illinois law. The standard the law provides to give a jury instruction on second-degree murder, McCaney wrote, is that there is evidence the defendant believed they were acting in self-defense, no matter how slight that evidence is. Rosenbaum acknowledged this standard during the trial when he denied giving the instruction, but said he didn't believe there was sufficient evidence whatsoever to support a claim of second degree. He said it was a close call, and that might have been the right thing to do, to give the jury options of second degree murder or manslaughter, but that he believed he was following the law accurately according to his duty as a judge. If I'm ever going to be reversed, it wouldn't surprise me if this is the one, Rosenbaum told the lawyers, but I have to tell you, I believe my rulings were correct on the law and on the facts. To the idea that this decision would likely be reversed, McCaney wrote, unfortunately for the trial court, we agree. Not only did the appellate court take issue with Rosenbaum's decision, but the justices felt that based on the record of the trial, there very well could have been a different outcome had he provided the jury that option. McCaney wrote that the court record of the trial said Assistant State's Attorney Scott Larson was the one to suggest the defense create an imperfect self-defense instruction for the jury. While the evidence presented that Colbert believed she acted in self-defense could be slight or maybe based on her subjective statements, it would be up to the jury to decide how much weight to give those ideas. For those reasons, the appellate court ordered a new trial. McCaney wrote that this would not violate double jeopardy principles because there was sufficient evidence to find Colbert guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Rosenbaum told the News Gazette that while this could mean Colbert stands trial again, the state could also move to dismiss the case, or she could take a plea agreement, just like any other case before that, or before trial, excuse me. While there are some specific instances in which testimony from the original trial could be used in the new one, such as if a witness had since died, Rosenbaum said the lawyers typically call the same witnesses to return. And there's a photograph of Ariana Colbert in the courtroom provided by Mary Schenck of the News Gazette. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, March 4th, 2025. I'll be back shortly to continue reading part two of the News Gazette for today, so please stay with me. Thanks for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful day.